This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and today I'm joined by Maria Ngaga, a program manager at Microsoft, joining me from New York. Thank you very much for taking time out of your Saturday, Maria.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
To start off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Absolutely. So my name's Maria Ngaga. I am a program manager for Microsoft. I've been there for 7 years. I'm originally from Uganda, and what I work on Microsoft is, it's pretty interesting. It's about ways to bring .NET into new experiences, to bring it to new people, and building tooling and changes to the languages and able to bring it to the next generation of developers.
We see you a lot on Microsoft events like Build, Ignite, various shows. Is that specifically part of your role or something you like doing?
No, I actually like presenting. I took a bit of a break this year to concentrate on the evolution of Try.NET and what we're doing in that space. But I do like presenting. I think it's a great way to share what we're doing with the community, to let people know that we are actively listening to customers and, you know, putting their products back. And there's nothing better, like when you go to a conference, than the hallway conversations, because I feel like that's more impactful than actually just attending the conference and going to the talks, but actually really understanding people's opinions on where we should be going.
The hallway track, as they
say. Oh, yes. So the hallway track is the best.
Do you spend a lot of time traveling around?
I do. Not as much as my boss. My boss, I think, travels way too much. My boss is Scott Hanselman. I probably travel about 6 times a year to go to conferences. When I tell some of my friends who are not in this space that I do that, they're just like, oh, that's so much travel for work. But then when I talk to other, you know, people in the tech space who do love to speak a lot, they're just like, only 6? I did 20. And I was like, okay.
I have seen friends of mine from the conferences I've attended and presented at. There seems to be almost an addiction by some people.
Yeah.
You know, I know some people who will travel twice a month to conferences, and they won't be, you know, they'll be long flights. They might be within the United States or they might be international. It's like coming out of NDC Oslo in the summer, some people I knew from that were heading to Germany, then Holland, then Latvia before they headed back to wherever they were from.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know if I'd do that. No. But no, but I can understand the excitement of presenting. There's a fear and there's a rush as well when you're on the stage that everything just fades away. And it's amazing. It's amazing to share your work. It's like a show and tell in front of thousands of people.
Well, maybe for you, tens of people for me, perhaps. But let's turn to our topic for today, which is going to be Try.NET. This is something relatively new from Microsoft. So can you give us an overview, please?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I should probably start with, you know, where it started, right? So when I first joined the .NET team, prior to being a program manager, I was an evangelist, and I used to work a lot with academia. So I worked with university students and startups. So these were people who really weren't using our stack, weren't using our product, didn't know anything about .NET, didn't know anything about Azure. So when I was hired onto the .NET team, Hunter, who is my skip, so my manager's manager, gave me this huge charter and said, I want you to figure out how to bring the next generation of developers onto the platform. And I was just like, well, that's huge. So I did a lot of research, and I found one of the things, if you went to Go, if you went to JavaScript, if you went to Python, even if you went to Scala, if you went to any of their documentation, they had this really good interactive experience in the browser, right? So they had this opportunity for people to experiment with code right within the browser. They didn't require you to install an SDK. They didn't require you to install Visual Studio or any editor. You could just learn the fundamentals of the language. And I thought back to experiences that I had had where I was just like, okay, I want to teach you how to do this in C#, or we're going to bring this, build this Xamarin application. And it was like, install Visual Studio. This was before VS Code. Let's come back tomorrow and let's continue. And then we would see, you know, you'd have a room of 100 kids at a hackathon, and it would dwindle to like 15. And you're just like, okay, these 15 really want the Xbox. They really want to get that prize. So I said, we need to figure out how to make those interactive experiences online. And I feel like that's a great way to get people experimenting with code. And that was the birth of Try.NET. Try.NET is a way for people to experiment with C# code without having to install any of the ceremonial tools such as an IDE or an editor to get started.
And is it limited to C#, or is it any of the .NET languages?
So it depends on which flavors. Currently, if you use try.net on the web, it is strictly C Sharp. We are planning to introduce F Sharp support and VB support, hopefully over the course of the next calendar year. We're just a very small team. But right now, it's only C Sharp.
Can you describe a little bit more, I suppose, visually? What does it look like if I came along as someone who's never looked at try.net before and I want to, I Google it, I find the page, what's presented to me and what do I do?
Okay, perfect question. So there are two ways that you'll see try.net. And this is where it can get confusing, as a couple of things get confusing in the .NET space. So please bear with me. We're trying to make it simpler. So try.net is in two forms. The original form of try.net that came out in 2017, if you went to docs.microsoft.com and you looked at their quick starts, you would see a button that had enter focus mode. And when you launch that, you have this rich interactive experience where you can copy the code into an editor. You hit it, you run it, you see it running right within the browser. You can edit it, you get IntelliSense, you get all the things that you would expect if you were on a local experience. And that was where we were for about 18 months. And we were there really well, like in a very good spot. We used, before I go into the technical details, let me go to the next step. After doing that for about 18 months, one of the biggest pieces of feedback we got was like, where's the offline experience for this? And one of the PMs on our team, he's a principal PM, he said, one of the hugest challenges that .NET has is that you have to have an IDE or editor once you've even installed the SDK to be successful. So what can we do to enable someone to be successful from the moment of when they just install the .NET Core SDK? Like, what can they do with just the SDK? So we thought about that for a bit. And we said, you know, when we go into these workshops, when we go into schools, we still have that ramp of like, okay, we've excited them online, but then what, right? We excite the people online to be interested in using .NET, but what's the next step? So we decided to build a global tool like called .NET Try, which was going to be the equivalent of what you see online. And the idea was that if someone had a GitHub repo, which had tutorials and a markdown file, we could replace those snippets that everyone has within their markdown with actual running code. So someone would be able to download the .NET Core SDK, clone the repo of their choice, use the .NET Try global tool, which they can get on NuGet. Once they have all that on their machine, you just go over, go to the repo, type .NET Try, and then the browser launches with a markdown, which had interactive snippets. And that was a game changer for us. It blew people's minds. So the two ways to get .NET Try today, there's as a person who's learning online, you just want to learn C Sharp, go to docs.microsoft.com. Their C Sharp samples over the next year will all be interactive, so all of them will be able to run. And you can also go to the .NET page, which is our marketing site, and you'll see learning pages there. And if you are a content creator who wants those interactive, lightweight experiences for people to write and edit code, you can use a .NET Try global tool, which you can get on NuGet.
With the online side, how complex can an example get? Because sometimes, you know, I'm on docs.microsoft.com and I'm reading about something to do, let's say, with dependency injection inside in Web API. That's pretty heavy.
Yes. And that's an excellent question. So you can't get that heavy, and I can explain why. So this brings us back to how the architecture had to change for try.net. So when we initially started try.net, and I said, let's build a, you know, let's run C Sharp code in the browser. Everybody looked at me and like, that's crazy. That will never happen. And it had to be, and I said, it has to be free. It has to be login free. It had to be all these different things. And they're just like, okay, so we used Azure Container Instances, right? And for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's a way to spin up containers really, really fast in the browser, right, online. So any single time someone would go to docs.microsoft.com, they were using a container which had the .NET SDK in it, and there we could get as complex as we wanted. We actually even experimented with doing some Web API tutorials online, and they were working fine. But then we got slapped with a bill, and I use slapped very lightly, like with a bill of $30,000 for a month. And I got a very, very lovely, very polite email from our corporate vice president saying that I had to figure out a way to reduce this bill. And at that time, we switched to Blazor. So we Blazor had just come out, and our team saw it as an opportunity to take WebAssembly and run C# code in the browser. And when that happened, because of the limitations that we have, with WebAssembly, we can only do basic console applications. So it can't get that complicated. And at that point, we'd probably want to transition someone to an editor or transition them to Microsoft Learn that also uses interactive experiences online. They just happen to use Azure Container Instances, but they have more money than us, so they can afford the bill. So you can't get that complicated with the online version of Try.net. Maybe WebAssembly will reach there someday, like with Blazor. We're just not there right now.
That $30,000 kind of sounds like success to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sign you were popular and you were getting traction.
Yes, we were popular and we were getting traction, but we were producing, we were driving no revenue. So we were just like, yeah.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
When you compare it to other things that are out there, like REPL, I know almost nothing about it, yep. But I'm sure listeners do. How does it compare?
So when you compare it to like other platforms out there like REPLit, it's not designed to really compete with REPLit. REPLit is an amazing online experience for learning. Their goal is to keep people in the browser and learn in the browser. Our goal is to enable people to experiment, right? So we don't want you building your first web application in the browser with Try.net or any of the interactive experiences we build. What we do want you to do is have an easier on-ramp into learning the language fundamentals, right? Or playing around with packages or APIs. That was our goal. So they definitely inspired what we were going to do. It was a way, like even when I was pitching Try.net to my leadership team, I was like, I want you to look at the REPLit numbers. I want you to look at what they did on javascript.com, which then got bought by Pluralsights, where in the browser, from the moment someone landed on a launching page, on the landing page for any language, you were presented with code. And you were presented with a way to experiment with code. And that would create a loyal, not fan base, I don't want to use a fan base, but like a loyal following of people who knew that this page was built for them. They understood that you're not trying to sell me an IDE or sell me an editor or sell me a service. You just want me to learn. And that's what our goal was with Try.net too.
And how are those goals working out? Do you find people doing what you expected?
So we find people doing more than we were expected. So initially, we just thought we'd have a bunch of people who would be running code and that was it, right? So people would just be like, console.writeline, int a plus, int, like those kind of stuff. But then we found people wanted to do more complicated stuff. So we started getting approached by teams quite a bit. So the Power BI team reached out to us and said, oh, how can we use what you're doing? To start, you know, for people start writing queries, not queries, for example, but like writing programs against their huge dashboards. Like, how do we bridge the gap between data science and engineering? So we found people trying to put this in places that we weren't expecting. We got approached by someone from a competitive platform, and I won't mention the competitive platform's name. We were just like, we would love to embed this in our documentation so we can on-ramp .NET developers onto our cloud. So people wanted to use it as a way to spin up into their Azure DevOps pipelines or any of the pipelines that they had to create wikis and documentations. So this one thing that we had thought would just be a learning tool started being part of like the DevOps strategy of what people were thinking about. So that was pretty exciting for us to see.
My own usage of it started probably, I think in March, I was presenting a workshop on Poly, the resilience framework for .NET, at a local Boston code camp. Bill Wagner happened to be in the audience. The workshop didn't work out very well because some people had trouble getting into Git. Some people didn't have Git installed. Some people had TFS and didn't know how to make queries. In the end, it turned into more of a talk and a demo. But after it, Bill came up to me and said, this would be perfect for try.NET. So then, you know, over a period of a few weeks, I went through all the capabilities of Poly and put them into try.NET examples, and they all run very, very well. And Poly isn't a trivial example of a library, but I was able to demonstrate retries, wait and retries, circuit breakers, bulkhead, pretty much every single policy. And that is one of the ones that is highlighted on the try.NET page. I think there's a link to my repo. Yeah. If anyone wants to try it out. So you can get pretty complicated and pretty useful demos with it.
No, and Bill, as mentioned, Bill Wagner has been one of our biggest advocates, and we demo everything to Bill before we release it into the public, because he just has such a great knowledge, not only of the C# language, but of the community and how we educate people. But that's like a really good example, because when we released try.NET on the website, the biggest thing for people was like, when can I use this for documentation, right? Like, that was the biggest thing. Everybody wanted to use it. We had conversations with the NuGet team where if you go to anything like NPM and you go over to their websites, you'll notice that NPM has the option for you to test the NuGet, the package in the browser. And those are other things that we're exploring, is that you want people to try things out before you install it. Otherwise, you have like 100 plus console applications out there. I know I have like hundreds of console applications and web application 123 on my computer right now. So I think when we released try.NET in its markdown form, someone sent a tweet saying, I am done with web application 342. Those are really cool things that we like to see happening in the community.
Let's say I'm in a company and I want to demonstrate, for example, Poly to my colleagues. Mm-hmm. I can point them to my GitHub repo, and they can clone it and then they can run it. But could I have that running on a web server somewhere available all the time, as opposed to having to get them to do it?
Oh, like have your own
try.NET. Have the page running. I presume I can, but do you see that as an example or as a use case?
Yes, no, that is definitely a use case. And it was a use case that we were actively exploring. And it's something we're bringing back quite actively. I can explain why we're not exploring that experience right now. If that helps.
Please.
So when we launched try.NET with the interactive markdown at Build, the one that you've used to build your workshops, the first thing that came up is, oh, this is like Jupyter Notebooks, right? So we got a charter from our corporate vice president, given that feedback, that I think this is a perfect way to bring .NET into the Jupyter ecosystem. So from Build up until November of this year, we were solely concentrating on building the .NET kernel, which brings .NET into the data science ecosystem. And that's why that sat on the back burner, but is being revisited now. So what we're looking at right now is allowing for people to host a try.NET iframe on their webpage that speaks directly to our service. So that is going to be coming. The actual release date, I can't give you one, and I don't want to lie to you right now. But I would say with community contributions, because we're making some changes into the repo, we would hope that we'd have something for the community to contribute back to, so we can enable experiences like that. So you should be able to host your own service, even with a GitHub page. Like, imagine if you could just spin up a GitHub page and it would just work, right? Like, yeah. That is our goal. Like, that is our goal, that if you had if you have your GitHub and it's try.NET enabled, we want you to just be able to spin up a GitHub page, and there you go. You have the same experience online as you would offline on your machine.
You mentioned Blazor a couple of times. I'm not incredibly familiar with Blazor. Can you explain how Blazor works in the context of Try.net?
Good question. And the truth is, off the top of my head, I cannot right now.
That's fine.
Yeah. But if for those of you on the who are not familiar with Blazor, Blazor is a front-end Spar framework, all written in .NET and C#. So rather than having to use a Vue front-end or use an Angular front-end or a React front-end, right, using JavaScript, you can now do it with Blazor. So you actually have C# code running on the client side. So we took that element and we put it to Try.net. So we took those bits. I can actually send, I don't know if it would help, but I could actually send you the architectural diagram. And you could put it up on the blog post under it. So sure. Like, this is how Try.net works.
Absolutely.
Like, off the top of my head, I'm just like, I know it, but I'm not like very familiar with the internals.
No problem. Yeah. What frameworks do I need to be on, or what do I need to install to get it to work?
Yes.
Locally, let's say.
To run locally. So if you are using, for .NET Try, you need the .NET Core 2.1 SDK. And the reason is that the .NET Core 2.1 SDK is the only one that has client-side Blazor on it. Like, Blazor right now is only server-side, and this was the one version of the package of the Blazor that had the client-side experience that shipping.
Just to be clear, 2.2 won't have it, so even if I'm developing in 2.2, I need to install 2.1 to run Try.net.
You need to have 2.1 to run Try.net, and you need the .NET Core 3.0 SDK and up.
So, and then, is that, do you think you're going to make it more backward compatible, or is it kind of moving forward only from now on?
It's moving forward only from now on. And that's because, it's purely because when we built the .NET Try Global tool, those are the versions of .NET available. So it's those moving forward.
And where is the future of Try.net?
Oh, great question. So Try.net, and you're going to be the first person, I don't know when you're going to be posting this, but next week we are announcing that Try.net's name is changing. It's not going away. It's changing. It's becoming .NET Interactive. And .NET Interactive is just different interactive experiences for .NET. So this will still exist. Try.net will still exist, but under that umbrella. So Try.net will be part of the .NET Interactive story. And then the other part of that umbrella is the .NET kernel, which is the ability for us to play in the data science space. So the big thing for us for Try.net is building richer data tooling for the .NET ecosystem. So we want to have more compatibility with, and I don't know, are you familiar with the .NET kernel?
No, not at all.
Okay, absolutely. So this probably be a good way to kind of tell you where we're going. So the .NET kernel, we launched it November 6th at Ignite. And what it is the ability for someone to run .NET code in a notebook. And in those notebooks, and this is where everyone gets excited, is that we have both F# and C# support, right?
So what do you mean by a notebook?
Oh, great question. So if people who are familiar, Jupyter Notebooks is a very lightweight, they don't like it when people call it an editor, but it is. And it is basically you write code in one cell and you run it and executes, right? So every single cell in your notebook is a different block of code, but they can be independent, but they can also all connect together.
I've seen people using it for Python, for looking up data, doing manipulation and things like that.
And now you can use it with .NET. So we built the kernel. And there are many people, I want to emphasize, there are so many people out there in the community who have done work previously to enable .NET notebooks, Jupyter notebooks. But this is the first one from Microsoft, and we've got a lot of support and excitement even from people who have built previous .NET kernels about our work, because I think they're just excited that Microsoft is finally playing in this space and supporting this space as well. But I want to emphasize that there are so many other great projects that came before ours.
What other new features are going to be coming with Try.net as, you know, we move to .NET 3 becomes popular, Core 3 becomes popular, and then .NET 5 in a year's time?
Okay, so big things with Try.net, like Try.net traditional, is a Try.net This is when you realize that we really should have thought about the naming before we came.
This is kind of a familiar story with Microsoft, unfortunately.
Like it's a tongue twister. Try.net.js. So we want to build the Try.net.js API, which will allow people to just effortlessly add Try.net for free on any web page that they have. Like right now, if you want to use Try.net, you have to like know who Maria is. And then me and my engineers will whitelist your website and then host your iframe. What we want to do is like take that all away and just say, here's the API, here's a NuGet package, or here's the NPM package. Go be happy with what we've built. So that's like a big thing for Try.net. Another thing with Try.net is everything that we begin to do in the .NET kernel, we will also be bringing it into Try.net. So you'll be able to do like more visualization. So imagine being able to like plot graphs, right? So imagine being able to, if you wanted to use Try.net as a dashboard for the health of your service or your website, you would be able to do that. Imagine if you just wanted to use Try.net to show people how to draw on a canvas, right? You can do that. So we want to give people more freedom to even customize their Try.net experience. Right now you have our very traditional, probably a little bit plain template. We want you to be able to do and customize it as you will. So we want to give people more freedom to play around with Try.net. That's like a big thing on that side. On the .NET kernel side, we also want to be able to understand more than one language. So if you are F-sharp, C-sharp, VB, even if you're not a .NET language, which might be a bit of blasphemy to say right now, but like, you'll be able to use our kernel and our kernel will understand what you're doing. So there's a lot of innovation happening in that space quite a bit.
Yeah, one of the customizations I'd like to see is the output little, the window. I'd like to be able to make that bigger because sometimes I want more than three lines displayed so that the person doesn't have to scroll. So things like that would be very nice.
Yes, and those are all things that we want to allow people to do. We want you to specify what you need. We want to invest back in the Try.net experience and everything that you see. And we're also working very, like, we're being very careful where we want to make sure that anything that we do in the data science tooling, which is very interactive based, like, I think there's a lot that we can learn in traditional development, in the data science experience. We want to bring that into the developer and the learning experiences moving forward.
I think you mentioned that you're going to be rewriting a lot of the underlying code.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So there are a couple of things happening right now. First of all, we are splitting apart the repo. So currently the .NET kernel and Try.net exist in one repository. So we're splitting them into two different ones, right? So it will help for contributions. We're making some changes, especially on the kernel side, to allow for language interrupt and data interrupt, which will be the ability for people to share code. To share data across different languages. So for example, if I'm manipulating my data in C#, because C# is a language I know and love, but I want to take advantage of the amazing visualizations that exist in JavaScript and Python, I want to be able to do that. So those are things that we are beginning to do. In terms of like the actual architectural pieces, I don't want to give too much away now because I guarantee you that's going to change in the next couple of months. Like I've sat down with my engineers and one day we've agreed to this. And then I come back and they're like, oh, Maria, this was more efficient. And I'm just like, okay, as long as it works, I'm very happy. Like that's the most important thing. In terms of like tooling, because I think tooling is going to be a huge thing. I want people to be able to, like what you're able to do with interactive experiences with Try.net, because you've used Try.net before, Brian, right?
And oh, yes.
You have to try .NET try, and then you see it in the browser and you can see what it looks like. We want you to be able to do that right within VS Code. So you know how in VS Code, when you have your markdown and you do the split screen and the preview pale, we want to make sure that the preview side, you actually have the running snippets in there.
That would be nice, yeah.
So that's like a big thing. It's a big request from customers to enable that. So we're actively working with the Monaco team and the VS Code team to do that as well. But also try.net, we also wanted to support multiple languages, which would be interesting because you'd have .NET try dash Python. And then you're just like, that would be weird. But it's interesting that we're using our tooling to support different languages.
Yeah, but it's great when you can get community contributions that will make that possible for you.
Yes, that's... go ahead.
No, just how dominant VS Code has become because it's so open to all the languages.
Yeah, and that's the goal because, no, that's what we want. That is definitely what we want. And one of the reasons why we're splitting apart the repo to make it easier, that if you want to contribute to .NET try specifically, right? The either the web API, the API, or you want to the markdown experience, you can without having to worry about anything happening on the kernel side. And if you want to contribute on the kernel side, you can do all that without having to worry about what's happening on the traditional, like, I don't even know if it's a traditional, the original try.NET experience, right? Because it doesn't feel traditional yet. It's only 2 years old. So it's still a baby.
Can you give us a few of the links where to find try.NET, your Twitter, other relevant places?
Absolutely. So to find try.NET, the best place right now is our GitHub repo, which is, let me just pull that up.
Of course, take your time.
It is github.com/.NET/try. That is our landing page for everything. That's where you'll get the latest and greatest. We actively look at our issues. We discuss them regularly as a team. So that's the best way to learn about what we're doing. We'll also explain the different kind of interactive experiences that we've created for try.NET. To reach me on Twitter, I am Lady Nagaga, right? So you think of Lady Gaga, Lady Nagaga. So it's my lady and then my last name. And what was the third one you asked about?
Oh, I don't know. I think it was primarily links to try.NET and to find yourself. You can throw it into any search engine and you'll end up on the .NET on Microsoft.com/try.NET page, which has an interactive running demo for you as well.
Exactly. And that page is going to change to look to have more, right? So it's a little bit outdated. Purely because we're trying to keep what we were doing under the wraps because we didn't know if we would be able to ship it in time.
I imagine the name will change too when it all becomes the new name in a few weeks.
Yes, .NET Interactive, but try.NET will always be it's the heart and soul of the actual project because we always want people to try things out, right? So I think it's a beautiful name.
It's lovely. Any final notes before we wrap up, Maria?
No, I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening. And if you have any questions, any thoughts, any feedback, any requests on what we're building with try.NET and .NET Interactive and the .NET kernel, we are always welcome. We always welcome feedback because we build best with the community.
Maria Nagaga, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you too, Bram.
If you like this episode, you might also like episode 124 with Mads Torgersen on C#8. Or episode 92 with Felina Hermans on what programming is. Thank you. The opening music was Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Lost and Found by Paddington Bear from the album Bon Voyage.